At the AOA convention in San Antonio, Texas, in 1985, Alf Thompson interviewed Ruth Weiser.
Downstairs about a daughter that you adopted when you were with the Red Cross. Tell me more about that.
Well,
Alf, you want to come in and sit down here? Pull up a chair from the other room and join us.
I'll just take Betty's place. Excuse me. I know Ruth pretty well. I'll just sit down and give her the dishes.
All right.
Where are you?
Well, we're just trying to find out this story about this daughter that she adopted.
Oh.
And that...
Just let Ruth do the talking.
Yeah, yeah. How old was she when you adopted her?
Well, she was...
Not when you adopted, when you first saw her.
When she came into my care, she was about 2 days old. The umbilical cord had not been properly cared for yet, and that was how we knew she was a newborn. She was abandoned in the Yokohama railroad station by her grandmother, and the MPs, of course, were all over the station, and one of the MPs was given the child. Didn't know quite what to do with it, but when he saw a Red Cross girl coming through, and fortunately he knew me, he came to me with the child and thrust it in my arms. I knew it was a child because it was moving and alive. And I was afraid, of course, to become involved with an abandoned baby, and requested that the sisters who lived across the street from our villa be brought to the station to accept the baby. They already had two or three abandoned children in their hospital care. One of the UP men who was passing through, being alert to kind of publicity that comes out of a war, overheard some of the conversation, and immediately he volunteered to go up to the hospital and bring the little sister down, whom I had named for him to bring, the little Irish nun that I had met previous time.
Is there a story behind that?
Quite
how you met the Irish nun?
Yes, when I first went into Japan, I built the first club in Japan. I have to tell you that. I built the first club in Japan.
That's a Red Cross club you're talking about.
Yes. Up above
Kamakura. Where did you build it?
Kamakura, up above Kamakura.
Now, you said this was in Kamakura? Where is that?
Oh, where I built the first club.
Yes.
Yes.
And where is it located relative to the
city? It's located up in the hills. Actually, it's up in the part of Japan that's very famous for cherry blossoms.
Well, is this on the main, related to Tokyo, for instance?
Well, it's quite some distance from Yokohama, actually.
From Yokohama?
Yeah. Kamakura is where the Daibutsu is, the big statue that you can go up into of the Buddha. There. And
how long you built the first club there?
I built the first club up where they weren't kamikazes, but they were these one-man submarines. It was the barracks of that group of Japanese soldiers. And they had this base up there, and a colonel who had served for quite a number of years, and he knew Eleanor Roosevelt quite well, used to ride horseback with her, and I was the first woman to be on a base. And of course I had to take girls up there later to serve with us, but we were stationed up there, and we built the first club in one of the old
I don't want to interrupt the story about the baby, but I do think people would like to know about your first club.
And how
go
she...
Go back to the baby now.
Well, we're trying to find out how she got acquainted with this nun.
So, later on, I was in view of being the only woman there in the first place. When some of the other girls came, we decided we should take the GIs on tours, because everybody was curious about where they were, and what was to be seen. And we lit out in a Jeep one day just to find spots of interest that we could take them to. A little island called Inoshima was close by, and this is where the Japanese girls used to cross a rope bridge and go over and pray for a man, or pray for a husband. And we thought that would be interesting. And we had our Jeep loaded. We'd been to the PX in Tokyo, and we had our Jeep loaded with cigarettes, candy, all the rations that we could get. And we had blankets and things of that sort in the Jeep also, which we didn't want to leave parked anywhere, because the minute you stop in Japan, out of nowhere come hundreds of people, mostly children, just to gape and see what you got, see who you are. But we searched, and we found a little walled city that had a missionary nuns staying there. The name was on the outside that it was a mission. I told the driver, I said, let's go in there and see if they'll put the Jeep behind the walled city so we can walk over to the island and our things won't be stolen. We did this, and the sisters there were the French nuns who had those big jupes, you know, those big curlicue hats that they wore in olden days. And they asked us for tea. This is just my driver and myself. We went in to tea, and the tea turned out to be hot water. So I told the driver, I said, something's wrong here. These people don't have anything. So we finally got around to asking them what their circumstances were. They had been bombed out, and one of the Japanese, the native sisters, her father owned this little walled-in house, and he had taken all of these sisters in after their school and hospital had been bombed. And they were all there, the entire order, and they were starving to death. They had no food. The only food they could get was through the Japanese haikyu, which was like a ration. And the only person who had the ration was one nun. So you know they couldn't feed 30 or 40 nuns. We went through their kitchen. We found their cupboards bare. When we got back to camp, we went to the mess sergeant. We said, we got a bunch of women down there starving in a mission. What can we do about it? The next day, a 6x6 was loaded to the gills. In the middle of the night, down we went with all this food.
Always the middle of the night, huh?
Yep.
And midnight requisition.
Midnight requisition. We visited, and we did get into an upstairs room where they had their ill sisters. And there was one there who was dying, obviously. And she did have cancer, we later learned. And the sisters had asked, when I said, is there anything else we can do for you after we've given them blankets and food and all this? She said, yes, a doctor. I said, well, our doctors are not allowed to treat civilians, but we'll see what we can do. I went back to camp, went to the chaplain. He said, our little doctor just happens to be Catholic. Maybe he'll break the rule for you. He did break the rule. We did go down. And he said that we had to get this nun to a hospital. So I had a Japanese friend who knew where this hospital, International Hospital, was in Yokohama. And we got the ambulance from the base. We put our little sister in the ambulance. We picked her up in the middle of the night. And we got into Yokohama to this International Hospital. And all later on, I was billeted across the street from there. But this is where we took the nun to die. And these sisters wouldn't turn her away. She wasn't of the same order, but they wouldn't turn her away because she was a Catholic nun.
Yeah, sure.
And our little doctor provided the medication that was necessary to keep her comfortable. And it was a year and a half later when I was stationed in Yokohama, took over the donut factory because they had to fly some girl home who had a disease or something that couldn't be helped there. And I walked out in front of the billet and looked across the street, and here was the hospital. I deposited this nun in.
And this is where you took
the baby. This is where I took the baby.
So we'll get back to the baby.
Yeah.
I went over and got acquainted with them, and then when I got the baby down in the railroad station, they were the people I called.
Other stories to tell.
Okay. Now we'll go back to the baby. Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Now tell us, you took the baby over there.
Yes.
And tell us then, the rest of the story, as briefly as you can, Ruthie, to make it fast.
These nuns had already gathered two or three GI babies in that had been abandoned. And Franny was about third or fourth baby that they had. When we got to the hospital from downtown and they unwrapped the baby, she was in swaddling clothes. That's how we knew she was Chinese. And the little Irish nun who was there had been in China, and she knew too. And I think my only participation with that baby was to be her godmother when they baptized her. And at the same time, there were several other Red Cross gals who I drugged them over to be godmothers to other abandoned babies.
Great.
And when she was 3 months old, she contracted pneumonia. And a doctor friend of mine down at the dispensary brought penicillin, which was like gold then. And we saved her life. And from then on, I more or less became her caretaker as far as paying for her keep and so forth.
When did you decide to make her your own?
Well, she kind of grew on me, or I grew on her. I don't know which. They used to tell me she wouldn't eat until I came. So I was doing two jobs. I was taking care of a baby and working for Red Cross at the same time. But the sister said, wouldn't it be nice if you could take her back to the United States, because she was quite fond of me and I was fond of her. And we started working on it. And I guess it's divine providence, because the way things fell together, a little Japanese doctor remembered delivering a baby down in the Motomachi section of Yokohama, which is the shopping center in the walled city of China. Wherever China is, in a foreign country that way, they're in a wall, behind the wall. They're to themselves, very exclusive. And there was a field director who had served in China, who was a friend of mine. It was just luck that he spoke the same dialect as these people. And when the doctor said he delivered a baby to a very young girl there, we started tracing it, and it turned out that this girl was Franny's mother.
That's great.
And her grandmother was there. In turn for getting her to give the baby to us, we had to promise to get mother and grandmother back to Shanghai. She couldn't keep the baby naturally because it was a girl, and China girls went by the board. But she was promised in marriage to somebody in Shanghai.
She had to go home. Her mother was.
Yes, her mother was. But anyway, we started gathering all the evidence that we could. We even had a man who was studied the skulls of the children. He came into the baby home. We put Franny in there. She wasn't supposed to be there, but we put her in there just to see what he would say. And the minute he put his hands on her head, he said, this baby's Chinese. And that was how we were so certain that she wasn't Japanese. Well, a Chinese in Japan is without a country, really. They hate each other. They did. They still do. But the nuns did help a lot. The doctor, knowing who she was, we had to prove she was 51% other than Oriental. And the visas were, the quotas were all filled for Japan, and she had been born in Japan, so we had to go onto the Chinese quota.
But tell us now, let's jump a little bit to the final deal when you got MacArthur's help.
Yes. I had a relative who was on strike commission and working for MacArthur on the reparations program in Japan. And he knew about the baby because it took him to the hospital to see her. And he tried to discourage me, as Red Cross tried to discourage me. Everybody tried to discourage me. But He did say, before I leave, I'm going to leave a letter for you to General MacArthur. In the meantime, I had met MacArthur several times. I'd entertained his wife and his son and knew the family. I thought I knew him well enough to go up and say hello. However, the letter did it. I put the letter aside and until it came time for me to sail home. Matter of fact, if I didn't go, I would have to pay my own way because Red Cross was sending me home after 5 years in New York. And I took the letter over to the Daiichi building in Tokyo, marched in like I owned the place, and asked to see General MacArthur.
You would.
And they ushered me into his presence. He remembered me, remembered my relative, and told me to go back to Yokohama and not worry. My orders would be forthcoming, and they did. The orders came.
Now, so we'll skip that, and you brought the baby home.
Yes.
Now tell us what has happened since, briefly.
Well, they reduced her visa from 1 year to 6 months. And I was told by the immigration man that I had to adopt this child within 6 months, or both of us would go back to Japan. And so when I got home to Cleveland, finally, I employed the services of a man who was attorney general, state, and he got to a judge. I was the first woman, single, to adopt in the state of Ohio.
That's the old, right. The first woman single to adopt.
That's right. And the old judge sat up there and held her on his lap and banged his gavel and said, if you have enough guts to bring her here, I have enough guts to give her to you.
Well, isn't that wonderful?
That was it.
Didn't you have to have sponsors for her?
Yes. The Divine Providence Foundation in New York City. That's the same order of nuns who kept her over there in the hospital until I came home. They put up their whole foundation to sponsor her.
Well,
when I started out, I had to pay for her transportation. Then before we left, they returned half of it to me because she was a child. When MacArthur got word that they had charged for her, he had a fit. They returned the whole bit to
me. Yeah.
So she went over actually as a military, free military person. I'm sending you a copy of her orders.
I'd love to have it, Ruth.
For your
I'd love to have it.
Yes.
Tell me, just because we do have the time limits, tell me about Fran now. Tell us a little bit about her development.
Yes, she...
Could I interrupt here a minute? Aren't there some other people that she was that helped her considerably that we want brought in here?
Yes, we had to have some guarantees and so forth. And Cardinal Spellman had visited in Japan with Bishop Sheen. He was then the bishop. He later became something greater. But they visited the baby home where it was called Our Lady of Lourdes Baby Home there at the hospital. And the nuns had selected Franny to present a bouquet to the Archbishop, to Spellman. And when we got out to the car, and he gets out of this car and all his robes and everything, this little thing walks up with the bouquet and hands it to him. Well, he was still trying to gather his robes about him. And when he stood up straight, she looked right up at him and said, "Now you say thank you." So he never forgot that child. And when it came time for Franny to have sponsorship for college and so forth, she earned her own way, actually, through college.
How?
She worked in the, first she got a scholarship. Let's start out that way. She got a scholarship for good grades. Then Cardinal Spellman also gave her a scholarship through funds that he had for the Chinese refugees and so forth. And she was an excellent student. She graduated cum laude from St. Teresa's College.
And when did she take up her singing?
She took that up in college and pursued it after she graduated because she just liked to sing.
Uh-huh.
And although she isn't being paid for her singing much, she does sing for groups, Legionnaires, EFWs,
yeah,
all these people.
Well, we've enjoyed her singing at some of our AOA events.
Oh, yes.
So, of course, we all love her and we all know about her and about her adoption. She's one of our AOA children, you know, in every way. Now, Ruth,
let me interrupt here, if I may. Didn't you have more sponsors than Cardinal Spellman for the child?
Oh, you had MacArthur, did you?
Well, MacArthur, General MacArthur.
And wasn't there another?
Bishop Sheen.
Bishop Sheen.
Yes.
And you came in contact with him when you were in New York?
Well, I met Cardinal Spellman and Bishop Sheen in Japan. And when we got to New York, and when I needed the people to back me, and I needed somebody to put up a bond, a very heavy bond, to take care of this child in case I couldn't, the Divine Providence Foundation of the Franciscan Missionaries of Mary put up their foundation. Of course, that was relinquished when I arrived, and I had to report to them in New York.
I thought you had all three.
Yes,
three notable names.
Oh, yes.
And they were her sponsors, really, right?
Yes, they really were.
And they were, again?
Cardinal Spellman.
Yes.
Bishop Sheen.
Yes.
And General MacArthur.
As her sponsors.
Right, that were her sponsors.
Yes, right.
Yes.
She attracted quite a following, all because this little Red Cross girl answered the call of one of our military police and took a warm bundle out of his arms and rested that bundle in the arms of the Lord until she could take it and raise it as her own. And we all have heard the story of Ruth and this wonderful girl, but we haven't even touched upon so many other things that have happened with Ruth. Ruth has been a president of our American Overseas Association. She's been one of our wheel horses. She's been one of the people we always call upon to get things done. And so the work that she did in Japan, in Red Cross, is carried into her community. She's been head of the welfare department of that whole section and is retired from that. No lady has served more people with greater love, with greater heart, and with greater understanding than Ruth. And we all love her. And we thank you for being with us so we can put this on tape.
Thank you.
And you have added another real nice chapter to your collection. What did you say, that you were in prison?
Yes.
Where?
And that was my first contact with MacArthur. He sent his Marines in to get us out, actually. Oh. No, when I first went over, it was in 45, and it was just before the signing of the treaty on the Missouri.
Yeah.
Missouri, yeah. And I was supposed to...
Just a minute. I think we have to put this is the second chapter.
That's all right. Go right ahead. It's on.
Yeah.
It's on.
When we arrived close to Manila, we had to go over the side of the ship because things were in pretty much turmoil in the Philippines yet. Now, we were supposed to be taken to the nurses' headquarters in Manila to be billeted until we received assignments and went on. We went over the side of the ship, came in to shore, and a young GI met us with a 6x6.
What's that?
That's the biggest truck that the Army has, and it's has a canvas top over the top of it, and they used to pile us in there and take us places. And he met us, and he'd only been there 2 days himself. He didn't know Manila from a hole in the ground. So instead of taking us to Manila, he headed up into the mountains, Baguio.
I remember Baguio from World War I.
And the poor Japanese hadn't heard the war was over either, so they had still had snipers out. And when they saw that truck coming, they pulled their guns out and started shooting at us. And the poor driver, he was so green, but he had sense enough to say, "Oh, for God's sake, get under the truck." He stopped the truck, wanted us to get under it. I got everything under but this thing. And I got a sniper's bullet right through my knee. And, of course, we were captured, and they took us to Santa Tomas. That's the university there. They had taken
over
the university.
In Manila.
And we were there, I would say approximately about 3 months. But I had no medical care for me, for this knee, and it gangrene set in, and so forth and so on. And if it hadn't been for Fred Albee, who is now deceased, bless his heart, he was a marvelous orthopedic surgeon attached to the Army. But he told them not to try to send me home, to send me on up to Japan. And MacArthur took off after he arrived, after they'd gotten us out. MacArthur took off in one plane. I was on the plane right behind me. And there were only three Red Cross girls on that plane. And he had Tojo in tow with him as a prisoner.
And do you remember the other girls that were with you?
I tried to look up all their names. There was one girl who was killed. There were two or three who were shot up a little bit, but not
bad. Tell us about in Santa Tomas.
Well, this...
How did they house you then?
They housed us in these little cubicles. Well, it was a university, and they didn't have rooms. And they had a lot of missionaries there. If I'd looked then, I would have found these same missionaries that I located in Japan later, because they were there.
They were there.
And they didn't feed us anything but rice. They had no medics. And I said I never hated the Japanese because of that, simply because they didn't have anything for themselves either. Their people were dying like flies because of the lack of medical help also. But fortunately, I guess the good God was with me because I got to go to Japan, and they mobilized my knee for me in the infirmary there, 332nd Dispensary in Yokohama. And I just kept hobbling around and staying until I was ready to come home. And Red Cross did not have me stop at the hospital there in California. I think a real cute story about all of this is that when I did come home and had Franny with me, the National Red Cross wired field director in California to meet my ship. And the telegram read, "Red Cross girl arriving with child." And that poor field director nearly dropped his teeth when he saw the child. Because he thought, here's another pregnant Red Cross gal coming in. And I tell that story quite often about the poor field director not knowing.
Well, you see, Ruth, you said that you felt that Providence and the Lord had taken care of you.
Divine Providence from the word go.
This story makes me understand even more than what I have understood of your deep, abiding religious faith. And it's good to know how it came about.